Bonjour.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of So French. In this show, we give you everything about the twists and turns of French politics and an insight to all things French.
Every 2 weeks, we select the best, most interesting and fascinating of French news stories, all brought to you from our studio in the heart of Paris. My name is Stéphane de Vries.
And my name is Sara Bertelsson.
And this week, we talk about how France's last queen has gone from infamous to pop icon. Marie Antoinette, hated, admired, and most of all, misunderstood.
But first, there is a debate raging here in France again, we must say. And this is a debate that has been coming back over the last 30 years, maybe more or less in intensity. And it's a debate that, as a foreigner, I think most of us has a very, very hard time understanding. And despite this, it is a very serious one and with very serious consequences. And Stéphane, what am I talking about?
Yeah, we're talking, of course, about the hat scarf, a piece of fabric worn by mainly Muslim women here in France. Not a lot of women. You don't see them that often, actually, compared to other European countries. But, of course, this, for many French, is a sign of religious submission, and that's something that the French pretend not to like. And of course, we have to explain that there is a law in France, the only country in Europe with such a law, that dates from 1905, so over a century old, that separates the state from the church. And it was basically meant to limit the influence of the Catholic Church on French politics. So there's a very strict separation. And it means, for instance, that civil servants are not allowed to wear any what they call here ostentatious signs of religion. So, for instance, a cross around your neck, or a kippah if you're Jewish, or a headscarf.
You're allowed to wear a small cross.
A small cross, yeah, but if it's not too ostentatious.
Yeah, yes.
So, but what exactly is ostentatious? That's, of course, there's no definition of that.
Yes, so this is a law that separates the church from the state and is supposed to make sure that that religion is not part of state affairs. But
exactly,
that's where it all gets interesting,
yeah,
right? Because we also have here in France what is called religious freedom, right?
Absolutely.
And where you have the right to practice and participate in religious activities, no matter what this religion is.
And this law also from 1905, it basically says that the state should be neutral in religious affairs, so giving the freedom to everybody to believe whatever he likes or not to believe. But of course, this law was made in a time when there were no Muslims in France. Well, at least not on the continent. There were, of course, Muslims in all the colonies, but that didn't really matter at the time. But now, over a century later, there is a Muslim population in France who mainly came from the former colonies, mainly from Algeria. And, when it becomes complicated is at schools, because about 10 to 15 years ago, it was also forbidden for schools, for the pupils, to wear any ostentatious religious signs. So in France, girls who wear a headscarf cannot go to school unless they take it off. And there are indeed many girls who change.
Well, you have to go to school, so there is no...
Yeah,
you have to take off your headscarf.
Yeah, and so they change their clothing before entering the schools. And when they get out of schools, they change again. And now, this does not apply to universities. It does apply to schools. But there is a grey area, grey according to a lot of French, not if you listen to legal experts. And that's when parents of school children accompany those school children on trips. The French children go to cinema, for instance, or the theater, sometimes a couple of days, or to a farm. And then the schools ask the parents to be part of the trip, to accompany the children. And, there are women, of course, who wear a headscarf. Now, sometimes people get confused and they say, well, this is not allowed in schools, so we don't want to have these women with headscarves accompanying our children anymore.
And this was exactly the reason behind this latest flare-up of this very, very infected debate here.
A very violent debate as well, because the French don't seem to understand that this law, this laïcité, does not apply to its citizens. So they mix up the fact that anyone can enter a public building with
just to go back to sites. So what was it that happened this the last week? It was a school outing with a young children. They're between 10 and 11 years old, accompanied by a mother to one of the children. They went to one of the local parliaments to participate and to see how local democracy, and this is where it all gets
pretty ironic, actually.
Gets very ironic, because it was really a way of, you know, introducing these children to local democracy. And, you know, one of these women, mother of one of the boys in this group, wearing her headscarf, and while they're sitting in the local parliament, suddenly one of the elected
one of the local councillors
suddenly turns around and starts shouting at this woman and ordering her to leave the room, and accusing her of religious and political provocation because of her headscarf, and then asking then the president of the local parliament to you know, also asked this woman to leave. This created, of course, a massive row inside this parliament, where the president of the chamber, of course, said that it's not the rules, it's not the law. She has the right to be here. She's a private person. She's not doing any, I'd say she's not part of the authority in any way. She's just here as a private person. But it was a very, very violent
exchange,
and it happened on several levels, actually, because eventually this woman, even though she first stayed and she was asked by the other people to actually stay and not, you know, give in to this very serious attack, but she eventually actually left the room and tried to just collect herself, and she decided to go to the restrooms. And while she walked down to the restroom, she was once again attacked by one of the far right elected people, you know, very violently attacking her once again. But this, yeah, so this sequence, of course, went more or less viral on social media, and created once again this public debate on whether the far right politician was right to ask her to leave or not. And it's where what you said is interesting, because yes, according to the law and all specialists, I've still not heard one single specialist on the French law of laïcité, as it's called here, the secular law, saying that the far right politician had any right to demand what he did demand. But still, there is a debate. And
absolutely,
still now there are people asking the government to create new laws regarding this, regarding the parents accompanying their children.
Yeah, and there are even ministers and also MPs from Macron's party who want stricter laws. So they want to forbid the women wearing headscarves entering schools to accompany their children. So if they bring their children to school, they have to stay outside. Now, of course, this is great for integration, that people take part in daily life. But it is incredible that every couple of years, this debate resurges about the fundamental basic human rights. It's how to you dress
And it is interesting in the sense that, you know, France holds Europe's largest Muslim population in numbers. And yes, it's true that you don't see many veiled women when you go into a store, for example, working or, you know, taking part in you know, working society. But you do have a lot of women wearing the headscarf, especially in certain neighborhoods and, you know, certain parts of France, etc. And that it's still being considered as something so controversial. And I don't think, I mean, I haven't lived in all European countries, of course, but I have never heard of another European country where this question is so infected. And even, I mean, if we talk about women with headscarves taking part of working life, for example, it's very, very difficult.
It is.
For
a
woman. You almost have to choose between the headscarf and being a working woman. And this is in France, the country of freedom. Yes, but of freedom and of women's emancipation as well, where, you know, most French women work, much many more women than in many other European countries, even after having had children, etc. So it's a very I would say difficult thing to understand as a foreigner, how this can be so controversial. And I remember not that long ago, a couple of years ago, when H&M here in France is actually one of few places where you do see women wearing headscarves and working, you know, in a as a taking care of customers or whatever. But otherwise, you see it very, very rarely.
I think, indeed, France is probably the only country where it poses such a problem. And for instance, to give an example, in the Netherlands, there's a new presenter for the news, late night news, and she wears a headscarf, and nobody talks about that. It's just, you know, she's part of society. It attracts, it's public television, so that would be impossible in France because it's paid by the state, so then you're not allowed to. But it's not an issue at all.
And what's interesting here in France as well is that this reticence towards a headscarf comes from both sides. It comes from the right, the conservatives, and the far right, and it comes from the left as well. Because and the arguments are a little bit different. Because from the left, there is a very strong anti-headscarf sentiment, with the argument that it's repression of the women, and the free woman cannot wear a headscarf for many. For some,
and also a lot of men use that argument to be against the veil, and that's interesting because France is not really a very emancipated country. And in one of our previous episodes, we talked about the high number of women getting killed by their ex-husbands or ex-lovers, and now suddenly these men, French men, they defend women's rights. So it's quite ironic as well.
But yes, and Me Too, just to see how difficult the Me Too movement has had to actually, you know, being implemented in France. So no, it's interesting. You can use women's rights when it sort of suits your own purpose.
Absolutely. But there was another thing actually in this discussion, which is sometimes really get ridiculous. And actually, we're guilty about it as well, because we're talking about it and we have not invited a woman wearing a scarf to hear her point of view. But we're not the only one, because that's really astonishing. Of course, France has a lot of 24-hour news channels, so they all have to fill their channels with content all day. And there was a lot of debate. There were a lot of guests talking about it. Give us the numbers, Sarah.
Well, yes, because these are four of France's biggest 24-hour news channels. And so, of course, over this last week, massive debate, and many debates everywhere. And there's actually been a count that has been made. 286 guests took part
on TV.
On television.
Yeah.
Took part in these different kind of debates regarding the headscarf. And not one single woman wearing a headscarf. And this is, I mean, 200 out of 286, not one.
Yeah.
Not one.
Yeah, it shows also how patronizing it is in a way, you know. You talk about people and then they're not even there.
And you're saying that you're defending women's rights.
Yeah.
And these particular women's rights, but you still consider that you can talk in their name every time. Yeah. And it's absolutely shocking. I'm not sure if these channels have in any way reviewed the way they're putting together debates and, you know, inviting guests when it comes to these issues, but they definitely should. There is another thing that happened during these debates, and, you know, and it's the many, many racist slurs that we have seen over these last weeks. Quite shocking things. Yeah. We even had one journalist at one of these 24-hour networks claiming that wearing a headscarf is equivalent of the Nazi SS uniform. Yeah, sure. This is French television, and it's not an obscure, this is not a channel, an obscure far-right network that no one watches. This is a mainstream channel where these kind of claims can be made.
And what this journalist said is not even an exceptional opinion. I think it's there are many of his colleagues probably think the same. And, you know, it's just, what's the big deal indeed? It's very hard for a foreigner living in France to understand really why the French get so obsessed by this piece of fabric. And now, of course, there was also the government, because it is also a complicated topic for the government, because they know that they can win votes if they are strict with the ban. At the same time, they don't want to be...
At the same time, there are laws.
At the same time, there are laws, yeah. So how did the government react?
Well, we have seen quite a few different reactions from the government, and some of them being pretty ambiguous, we must say. We have, first of all, the Minister of Education, who is in the forefront of this debate, who had to step in and you say that, yes, it is true, the law doesn't ban anyone from accompanying children and at the same time wearing a headscarf. But in the next sentence, as he said this, he also added, and this was some kind of personal view, I believe, saying, but the headscarf is an unwanted feature in France. And this, of course, also created controversy, because it wasn't clear what he was actually trying to say. Previously this week, after almost a week of raging debate, the president stepped in and he said, we need to follow the law. There is nothing banning these women to partake in these outings. And we should not create, we need to unite the country, more or less. But he stepped in very late.
Yeah, very late. And even he was ambiguous, because in the wake of the attack at the police headquarters in Paris a couple of weeks ago, committed by a police officer or a civil servant working at the police headquarters, who converted to Islam a couple of years ago, Macron said that we should create a vigilant society, because, of course, this man was... allegedly, we still don't know for sure, allegedly radicalized while his colleagues didn't see anything. So Macron said that we should be more vigilant. And of course, he probably meant that we should watch Muslims more carefully. So it's a double discourse also by Emmanuel Macron, because he knows that he, with this rhetoric, he can also seduce the right-wing electorate. And of course, in 6 months, there are local elections. And Macron's party, La République En Marche, they really need every vote they can get, because they're not doing very well in the polls. They also, you know, they lost earlier, or they didn't win the European elections earlier this year.
So how much do you think that this debate flaring up now is a political game, and really says more about the political situation ahead of these local elections than actually, you know, mirroring the sentiment that French people have?
I'm not sure whether the French in the street, the average French man, is, you know, has an opinion about this. It probably doesn't even care.
Yeah, if you look at French society in general, it functions pretty well. In most communities, local.
Of course.
I mean, everywhere you go, you will have, you know, parents going to outings, you will have parents participating in their children's activities, whether it's football clubs or school outings, and most of the time this is not an issue.
No, absolutely not. But it is true, though, that, I mean, the percentage of Muslims in France is about 8%. That's about the same as in Sweden or the Benelux or Germany. And in all those countries, you see women working with headscarves in supermarkets or universities or at hospitals. And that's really something you don't see that often here in France. So you could ask the question, are those women working with headscarves in the other countries better integrated? Or is France doing a better job in banning the headscarf and letting those women, in a way, adapting to what France thinks that are the right moral values and traditions? I don't know. I prefer to see women just doing whatever they like, but it's pretty complicated in France. Hein?
Vous écoutez So French.
You are listening to So French.
So Sarah, we were just talking about the local elections coming up in 6 months. And speaking of local politics...
Our favorite local politician.
Yes.
This is the Patrick Balkany segment. Yeah. Well,
How is he doing?
I think he's doing... We do get regular updates, must say, about how he's doing in prison, because his wife, Isabelle Balkany, is actually giving quite often and quite regular interviews to French media and talking about what he's eating, what he's looking like and how he's doing in prison. As you can remember, Patrick Balkany, mayor of the Parisian suburb Levallois-Perret, wealthy western suburb, he was convicted to 4 years in prison last month for having hid millions of euros from the authorities. His wife also was convicted, actually, to 3 years in prison. However, since she has appealed, well, both of them has appealed, and she was then actually allowed to continue to be a free woman until that appeal has been... But this was not the end, and this is it's not only the appeals trial we were awaiting, but today was actually the second part of these accusations, the more serious charges hanging over the Balkanese, money laundering and corruption. How did that end up?
Well, Patrick Balkany was not present in the courtroom when the judge sentenced him to another 5 years on charges of money laundering and fraud and 10 years of ineligibility. So he is not allowed to stand for any election anymore within the next decade.
So it seems that Patrick Balkany, he will have to spend some more time in prison. Do you think he's happy there, Sarah?
Sounds like he's at least he has made himself bit comfortable where he is. According to reports, he has made good friends in the Parisian, in his VIP, you must say. Well, he's in a part of the prison which is for vulnerable people. But this is, according to many, supposed to be read as VIP people, actually. But he, according to rumors, he has got so cozy with his co-inmates that they're nowadays calling him Papa.
Incredible. So even in prison, he's still acting as if he's in charge of everything. Yeah, well, that's French politics.
Marie Antoinette, this very famous, almost a symbol of France, we could even say, and a symbol also of the end of the reign of the queens and kings of France and being the last queen of the nation, 226 years after her death. She haunts and she fascinates.
Absolutely. Marie Antoinette, the Austrian princess who married France's last king, Louis XVI. She a lot of people are fascinated by her.
She hasn't been described as much. She has been described as the reason why there was a revolution to begin with. She has been described as a woman living in excess and you know, famously, supposedly said, "Let them eat cake."
Yeah, absolutely. Which she never said. Allegedly.
And also being accused of having a very, very frivolous and excessive lifestyle, to say the least. But now there's a sort of an attempt to maybe rectify a little bit this image.
Yeah, there's actually an exhibition that opened this week in Paris that commemorates the anniversary of her death, which occurred on the 16th of October 1793. Well, so that's 226 years ago. I don't know why they want to commemorate the 226th anniversary
of her
death.
As good as any other day, I guess.
But it's actually interesting that in this exhibition, she's also represented by contemporary artists. There are a lot of stuff from her life. There are about 200 works of art in the exhibition. Also, fashion accessories, because she was well known for wearing very extravagant dresses. But also film extracts. Of course, Marie Antoinette's life has been filmed many times. I think the last time was by Sofia Coppola, where Marie Antoinette was played by Kirsten Dunst. A very actually almost a cult movie. Huh? She was
definitely
a very, very hype movie.
With Phoenix in, doing playing in music in the movie and everything. And she has become some kind of a pop icon.
That's absolutely true.
For many, and you know, symbolized also by the macaron and eating and everything. But there are many ideas about Marie Antoinette that has been shown to actually be absolutely fake. For to begin with, what many are saying that this lifestyle, this luxurious lifestyle that she held, was nothing that Marie Antoinette invented at all. She just walked straight in to a system where this was already in place. And in this whole where we talked about let them eat cake story, apparently the accusations that's what Queen said is something that French had been saying about queens forever.
Yeah, yeah.
But of course, also Marie Antoinette being a foreigner, it was also easier in some senses to accuse a foreigner of all these things of using the French resources and of having this extravagant lifestyle that didn't fit well, you know, what that wasn't accepted no longer by the people. So some are even saying that she was much more down to earth than you know the image has been. That
many historians also say that you know, the legend is that she was the main cause of the French Revolution. Now, that's, of course, humbug, because there are many other reasons for the French Revolution. And also that when Marie Antoinette arrived from Austria, of course, Versailles was already known for its extremely lavish lifestyle. It was the biggest court in Europe, the most extravagant. And when she arrived, France was already broke, just like today, actually. So it wasn't Marie Antoinette who caused the financial downturn of France.
No, it was more many bad choices by France's governing men.
Absolutely. And at the time, interestingly enough, the finances of the country were the personal finances of the king. So that was how money was handled here. It's actually, it hasn't changed a lot in all those centuries. But no, of course, she was the queen living a luxurious life. But at the same time, she may have been, I wouldn't say a victim, but maybe a collateral damage of the French Revolution. And I think many French still regret the fact that they chopped off the heads of the last king and queen. And that's maybe one of the reasons why they still like to attend these exhibitions, or at least, you know, it's like Jeanne d'Arc, you know, it's also a mythical figure whose story got really completely out of proportion. But nevertheless, there's again now an exhibition.
There are even people comparing Marie Antoinette to Lady Diana.
Yeah, yeah. Who also died in France. Almost, a couple of 100 meters from the place where Marie Antoinette was beheaded. Now, so maybe she was just collateral damage, but you know, you can go and see the exhibition for yourself in the Conciergerie. Actually, that's a nice place. It's the last, it was a former prison. And it was also the place where Marie Antoinette was held prisoner. And it was the last place where she lived. And from there, she went to the guillotine on the Place de la Concorde. So this is in the Conciergerie, in the heart of the city. And the exhibition lasts till the end of January. Well, that wraps up this edition of So French. We hope you have enjoyed it. You can listen to us on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher and YouTube. And we're also on Instagram. Our account is at So French News. So please follow us.
And if you like French music, check out our free playlist on Spotify, which we update regularly. Just search for So French Music or click the link on our website. And if you would like to contact us, please mail us on news@sofrench.news.
And you can also listen to us on air on World Radio Paris, the station with a lot of excellent shows in English, not only in Paris, but also at the Côte d'Azur, around Monaco, Nice and Cannes. We're broadcast at 2:30 p.m. local time on Saturday, and then rerun during the week.
We will be back in 2 weeks with a new episode of So French.
We hope you'll join us then. Thanks for listening. Au revoir.